Hello and welcome to this week's episode. We have Dr. Tracy on, who is a psychologist and couples therapist in Ottawa. For nearly two decades, Dr. Tracy has provided direct clinical services as well as researching, writing, and speaking about relationships. In addition to wellness seminars, Dr. Tracy makes clinical knowledge and research accessible to people through her contributions to popular media sites, including Times, Forbes, and Motherly. She is also the host of podcast I'm Not Your Shrink and author of her debut book, I Didn't Sign Up For This, A Couples Therapist Shares Real Life Stories of Breaking Patterns and Finding Joy in Relationships, including her own. I read the book. It is awesome. It is really down to earth and a different spin than other books that I've read about relationships in association to things that we didn't think we would get into in relationships, that when we started a relationship, we didn't expect it to be where it is today. Doesn't mean it's bad, but there are patterns that we create, including myself, that we struggle with to break them, to go around them, to look past them, and create happier, more fulfilling relationships. The book was amazing. She offers online webinars and trainings to people all over the world through her Be Connected digital program. She's also a mother of two young children, owner of Ottawa's mental health clinic, Integrated Wellness, so she knows a little bit of thing or two to balance the full load. In this week's episode, we're going to talk about the roots of our relationships and how some of these patterns can be created, continued, and even solidified in ways that we hope not, but maybe, just maybe, if you listen to this week's episode and learn a few things and pick up her book, you can break those patterns better than anyone else. So, before we get into the episode, a word from our sponsors, Alma. Hey, I want to thank Alma for sponsoring this week's episode. You know, building a private practice can be really challenging. I know for me, I was so scared of how I was going to get the right clients, the right fit, and them being able to pay. And taking insurance is really scary. Growing your caseload, navigating insurance, and managing billing and paperwork all take so much time. And that's all in addition to doing your best and delivering amazing care to your clients. That's why Alma gives clinicians the tools they need to build thriving private practices. When you join their insurance program, you can get credentialed within 45 days and access enhanced reimbursement rates with major payers. They also handle all the paperwork from eligibility checks to claim submissions and guarantee payment within 2 weeks of each appointment. In addition to their insurance program, Alma offers time-saving tools and administrative support so you can spend less time on paperwork and more time delivering great care to your clients. Learn more about building a thriving private practice with Alma at helloalma.com. That's hello, ALMA.com to get started. I'm really excited to have this conversation with you.
Me too, Ellie. A long overdue conversation. And I know that you and I are both parents and we're both therapists. And I imagine there are so many perspectives that you and I can bring in as just people and humans, but then also our cool collaborative perspective as therapists.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because sometimes I have this perspective and maybe I could be, but like, yeah, I'm a parenting specialist, I'm a relationship specialist. And sometimes I have no idea what the hell I'm doing with my own kids, you know, where there are like some days where I'm like, I thought I knew what I was doing. Like I work with so many people on the daily about their relationships and it just shows you. And I think, I don't know if you feel this, such a trend on social media in the world today of therapists being honest about their being human and, you know, whether it's diagnoses or real life struggles and things of that nature where we're not perfect and that's okay. And we never needed to be, but I think there was a pressure like, oh, you're a therapist. You probably have it all together. And when in reality, we don't. And that's sometimes very freeing. But I don't know. Do you feel that pressure sometimes, like internally, like I work with people so many days and I should know better or I should know what to do?
You know, it's fascinating that you're bringing this as our starting point right here, because I think this is such a big piece around what's happening in the context of what it means to be a therapist today and how the culture around therapy is changing. And for listeners to understand, this never changes how a therapist should show up with you in the room, which is that my stuff does not come into, it's not this Me Too experience. Oh yeah, you had a rough night sleeping. Oh, me too, right? Like that's not what what happens in therapy. But I think the difference is that the first day of my training doing my PhD in 2006, a professor said to us, you need to make sure there is no social media trail of you. You don't want your clients discovering anything about you. And that is how we were trained back then, is to truly be the blank slate. So a client comes in and you have nothing in front of you for them to put their projection, right? So we want all of that to come out. And yet I find what we as humans today, with the change and evolution of even social media and how we're not connected face-to-face as much as we once were, I think we sit in front of our therapists and often want to know, is it just me? Are you human too? Does this show up for you? And it's so powerful when, actually, I'll tell this story. So I can remember working with a client and I felt like there was this resistance around her really telling me the hard stuff. Like I was asking all the questions. I was going in and out, weaving in and out, trying to find like, you know, there's something in here. We got to find it. And then after about 4 or 5 sessions, she came in and said, well, I know you told me not to follow you on social media, and I know I signed the consent form, but you know, I do. So I saw your stories the other day, and I saw you say, I'm really struggling with parenting and how hard it is. And you're having one of those moments where like your kids were having a tantrum and you're like, I don't know what to do. I feel like I'm never enough for my kids. And she's like, it was the first time that I saw you as human. And I thought that you just like had it all together. And it was as if this wall came down for her, where she then felt safe enough to show me her messiness.
I love that. And, you know, sometimes I get nervous when I see clients of mine follow me, because then I question what to post. And I'll be honest, I used to put a lot more pressure on myself to post and how I posted and being perfect and all these things, when in reality, let's be honest, social media is not that important. And my real life is more important. But there is like this idea where I can post something and who knows if that will help someone feel seen and come into a session. I always make the whole spiel when I start with a client that nothing that we say ever gets into that realm of social media, but I always add a caveat. I'm very active and I've been with social media and I've worked as a therapist for 8 years. So it means that there are a lot of crossovers and a lot of themes that run true as humans that you might feel is about you, but in reality is 17 other people that I've worked with in the past 3 years. Yeah. So it's not about you. It's about you're not alone. And a lot of people are dealing with it. And I think the biggest thing, something happened this weekend. I had friends over stay for, I'm Orthodox Jewish and we keep Sabbath. And I had friends stay over for Sabbath and we have a daughter in the same class and a son in the same class. So we had them over. And when they came into the house and they're like, oh my gosh, your house is so calm and peaceful. They saw a moment. And I hate when people say that, because I'm like, you didn't see earlier last week or yesterday or literally Sunday when they left Saturday night. Sunday, my daughter had massive blowout tantrums. Yesterday, you know, all these different things. Mm. And then when things started getting real, like they normally do, she felt so happy that she struggles too as a parent. And we do also, and we were like corroborating and venting about parenting. And then she said something like, but Ellie, you're a therapist. I'm like, so I'm a therapist. Yeah. Parenting is so damn hard.
Yes. And other people need to see us as we struggle. Like it needs to like, you know, take us off the pedestal, right? We're human. Yeah.
I feel bad that people think that they are alone, that other parents look like they have it together, so to speak, whether it's a social media post, a picture, or just the moment that you happen to catch them, that all things are aligning and everything's working out, where the kids are calm and you're in a good headspace. They happen to see that one moment and think that's your life, when in reality it's not. And, you know, a lot of times, sometimes I used to struggle as a kid reading like these memoirs of people of like history and think, oh my God, they're perfect. Like, who could be the next, so to speak, person? And when you actually read real history, you realize that no one has their stuff together. Everyone has fights. Every couple has fights. Every, you know, kid throws tantrums. Everyone has poop explosions. Everyone gets woken up in the middle of the night. Everyone has those experiences where you look at yourself and you go, I can't believe I'm in this. I'm doing this. It doesn't make it any easier though.
No.
And, you know, for you, like, you know, you talk about a lot about these ideas of the way we view relationships and parenting. And I think there's a massive disservice and even destructive thing that we don't really help people get ready. And I always say this, I wish couples called me when they were dating or engaged before they were married and things got, you know, iffy. I wish people called me while they were pregnant or in the beginning before it got. What are some of those things that we can do that we finally go, oh my gosh, like the aha moment of realizing there's so much stuff we could do. Other people are struggling with this. Oh my gosh, I'm not alone. What are some of those things that you can shed some light on, of some truth to kind of help people realize that they're not alone and everyone's dealing with it, as well as some of the ways to prepare for that, that kind of reality?
Yeah, you know, I think you bring it up right there, is even this like aha moment of saying to your partner, I'm really struggling with this. Because I know this can even show up in partner dynamics, right? Where one partner seems to more easily tame the emotion, or to hold the boundary, or to get the bedtime done, right? And so even in our partnership, we can say to them, hey, you know what? I don't always know what I'm doing either. And this feels really overwhelming. So I think being that kind of touching into that vulnerability in those hard moments is really important, no matter what stage we're at in our relationship.
My wife and I pendulum between that. There are some weeks where she just has it all together and like is so calm and balanced with the kids, and I'm like edgy or kind of a little shorter with them. And there are some weeks where I like have it all together and like I connect with my daughter and my son and figuring out, and this works and that works. And it didn't work 2 days ago when it was working for my wife. My things weren't working. And I also think that the beautiful thing that we have to also realize on your, to add to your point, it's like we all have different energies and skills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a little sillier than my wife. I, you know, shake my booty and have a dance party and have a good time. My wife does also, but she actually knows how to dance better than me. I'm like the ridiculous. I do voices when I read books. I tell stories, it's just what I do. Right. I am more like sing-songy when I get my kids to do something. My wife has a softer, beautiful energy to her that I don't. I cannot be that. And it doesn't mean that I'm lacking, but I have to give her space to shine and back up and support her and clap and cheer. And that she does the same for me. And it doesn't mean that I'm like, what the hell am I doing wrong? It's, I can't do that, but I have a partner who can. And that teamwork is so important I view them, you know?
Totally. That's the piece. And we're often missing that, especially when it comes to parenthood, is that we think we should do it in the same. Parenthood, mental load type tasks, the division of labor, how we show up with family. We think that I do it one way, it should be this way, rather than stepping back and acknowledging that each person brings in their strengths. And I know that even in my own family, for us, you know, of course I come in and I've got that therapist validation part. I see the emotion so clearly. I can hang out with it a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. I know how to do the boundary piece. And that maybe isn't the area of expertise for my husband. But what he does do, though, is he plays a mean game of floor hockey that I have no interest in doing. You know, he can bring out that silly side and go do the soccer and the golf and the swimming. And he would pack up the kids on hard days in the chariot behind his bike when they were younger. And he would take them out for, I couldn't do that. I didn't have the strength to even do that. But he would take them out around, right? And I think when it comes to our relationships, one of the best things that we could prepare for is actually coming back to that place of you are two separate people. You are going to experience the world differently, and neither one of you is right or wrong. That really is part of that building that healthy interdependence, which is that autonomy and connection. And that connection piece of, okay, in this moment I'm struggling, can you take over? Or in this time, I feel like I'm just always getting it wrong. Is that what's, how are you feeling about how things are going? And having that, like both, and I can be a separate person. We can come back together and connect. Yeah. Don't you think that's so important?
Oh, 100%. Because there needs to be an individuality as well as a unified front. My only question to that, and just a learning thing and just a conversation piece, is like, how do we not let that cause a rift or struggle within when we have different ways of doing it? You know, something that I talk about often when my daughter, when she was born like 4 years ago, she's four and change right now. My son is like 14 months old. So I'm in the thick of the young stage. Yes. And the cuteness and the tantrums and the big energy and all that kind of love and awesomeness, as well as struggle. When my daughter was born, my wife was instantly connected to her. I didn't feel as connected to my daughter as I did with my son from the start. And it took me having paternity leave to find my energy and my voice and my style with my daughter to like fall in love again with her and truly accept being her father. Not that I ever pushed it away. I was all in. I've been wanting to be a dad since I was like 13, 14. Like I've always wanted to be a dad. But like I found me within her world.
Right.
And we have to let our people do that. But what if that world that you find as a mom, as a dad, as a caregiver, doesn't jive with what the other person sees as the quote unquote right, correct? And I want to be very clear. We're not talking about being dangerous. We're not talking about abuse. Right, we're not talking about hurt. Mm-hmm. Safety aside, just simple things of how you put them to bed, how you change diapers, how you talk to them, how you deal with them, how you get them to do things, food, play, TV, anything like that. How do we not let that be a rift? What can we remind ourselves? What can we do? What's the work that we can do? Because it is beautiful for them to have their voice, to have their energy. And how do we not let that impede on our view of either our partner, or how do we let them not cause such strife between the two of us to cause an argument?
I think there's this element in here is we have to understand, what's this doing for us? Why is it that we want them to be the same as us? Mm-hmm. And acknowledging that our partner is not going to be that person. And in some ways we have to grieve that, but we have to acknowledge that there's something that we're craving inside of us. And whatever that is, whatever it's giving it to us, we are adults now and we have to give it to ourselves. So the first idea here that comes to mind is validation and acknowledgement. So sometimes it can sound like, if my partner did it like me, then I'm valid, then I'm enough, then I'm worthy. We've got to separate that. Your partner is not going to be you, and you are enough. You are worthy already as you are. And really, I think this is also then stepping out of our ego that wants to be right, that craves to do it the right way, the best way. Mm-hmm. And there is no one right way. And I think even when we tap into the parenting literature, we need one secure parent. We need one parent to be doing the conscious parenting. And so if your partner is not quite on that same page as you, let's tap into that space and then also acknowledging some of our strengths. Mm-hmm. There's another piece in here, though, and I think that is around the, what are our values as a couple and a family? And so going back to your initial question, which is what couples, I wish couples did this earlier on, which is, what really matters to us? How do we want to run our household? How do we want to run and navigate stresses back and forth between us? How, if we do decide to have children, how do we want to then parent together? What will we do with big emotions? Mm. And that coming from a values place, or even the question I love having couples ask each other early on is, what did you see your caregivers or your parents do? So were there gender roles between mom and dad? What did that look like? How do you envision yourself then taking on roles in the family?
So I have a cutesy thing for this that my wife and I did with our mentor when we were getting married and dating. It's called the import-export list. And I highly recommend anyone, you can do this at any stage of your relationship, whether you've done it before or haven't done it yet. This is not like a make or break conversation kind of thing. This is a values conversation. And you sit down because you come from two different worlds. Now, my wife is Jewish. I'm Jewish. We grew up in Orthodox homes, grew up pretty similar, going to private. We are so different in the worlds that we grew up. She's West Coast, I'm East Coast, different styles of home because her parents are different than my parents. Her grandparents are than my grandparents. And they've been taught experientially different things of how to be in a family unit. So we do this thing called, import-export list. We sat for as long as we needed and we wrote down, okay, tell me what you have found valuable in your home. What would you like to import from your past, from your story, from your experiences? And what do you want to export? What don't you want in our joint unit? Just the two of us, our list, our agreement, so to speak, between the two of us of how we want our home to be. Whether that's an open home, lots of guests, not lots of guests, how we speak to each other. Do we slam doors? Do we yell? How do we want our kids to feel in our home? Religious things, family culture, adventure, life, all these things. What do you want to import from yours? What matters to you? Yeah. Can we make it part of our unified front? And we have a list that we have on a piece of paper that we wrote in pencil or pen. And every anniversary, we've missed one this year. This last year, we just got too crazy. We moved across the country. It got nuts. But every year since we've been married, we look at that list and reassess. Are these things still true? Now, we used to live in the city. Our values and what we can do were different. Now we live in Vegas. And we have more ability to be adventurous, which is something that we've always wanted to do. So Sundays, how do we take advantage of Sundays? Mm. Are we homebodies or are we going to have a mix and match, right? Are we going to go do things outside? Are we going to stay inside? You know, we live near our in-laws, my in-laws now. Does that change the list now? What boundaries do we want to create? What boundaries did we used to that we don't need to anymore, right? It's just this constant conversation of these values. And we call it the import-export list. What are we importing for our things? And what are we exporting that don't work for us anymore? And this is very similar, by the way, if you look at No Bad Parts by Dick Schwartz I think it's IFS, right?
Yeah, Internal Family Systems, right? Yep.
What doesn't work for me anymore? What used to be a value that did work for me or I needed it at some point, but now in this new state of my life, doesn't serve me for good. It did. Thank you so much. I'll see you later. Now, what works for me now? And you create that together and you can edit it. You can don't laminate it. That's the worst idea. Make it something editable.
I come from a very acceptance and commitment therapy perspective, which talks about us in context and psychological flexibility. And this right here is about that flexibility in our relationships. And so I think what tends to show up is we commit ourselves in a relationship. And then we have these expectations and these ideals, and then they're never talked about. Mm-hmm. And we don't make them explicit. We don't renegotiate. We don't revise, revisit, or even re-meet each other in different seasons in our relationship. And then so many people have come to my office. And as you know, my book's coming out in September. This is the I didn't sign up. Thank you. We pause and like just go, yeah. Ooh. But this is that moment where so many people were in my office. And if you're listening, I want to know if you've also had this thought, I didn't sign up for this.
I've heard that all the time. I work with couples every day and it's, we're at this point, how the heck did we get here? I didn't sign up for this. And I always question what this is and how come, and you know, I will say that I'm a big fan of a huge fan of yours. There's another, Vanessa Bennett wrote a book, It's Not Me, It's You.
Yes. Oh, the title.
Oh,
was just,
my gosh. Oh. That blew my mind. Did you read the book?
I have not read it yet.
It's okay if you haven't. Can I send you one? I'll send you a copy.
You don't need to send me a copy. I'll get
it. Oh, man. I like buying you books. Come on.
Fine. You don't need to send me a copy, but I'm sending you a copy of my book, though.
Please. I would love to read it, write about it, talk about it, share it with people. When I love a book and I love the people that write the book, I talk about it a little too much. People make fun of me that I have an obsession of reading and I have a huge amount of books and they're like all over the house. And when I have guests come over, I magically somehow put, I always like put books in the area. I'm like, oh, what is this book? What's that doing here? Oh my gosh. Explosive Child. What is that?
Drama-free family. What's that?
It didn't start with you. Oh my gosh. No, but the book says something that this concept that we have been accepting for many years, and I'm not saying that we need to get divorced just because things don't work. We should try to work our best on it and see if it fits our life. Yeah. But there is a thing where till death do us part concept, that we have to be with someone forever, is sometimes very detrimental when the people are not willing to adjust and pivot with you through life. You cannot, right. You're not married to the person that you married when you were younger. My wife and I got married. She was just out of college. She was 21. I was 23, right? Mm-hmm. We're not the same people. And that doesn't mean it's bad, but am I willing to grow with that person and reaffirm why I love them now, not why I used to love them and hold on to that image? Because that image will change. That person will grow. We want them to grow. We want us to grow. We're always progressing and evolving. And if we don't evolve with it, then we go, I didn't sign up for this because I signed up for that. Yeah. But like this is not what you said. This is not what you were. And we get surprised by the fact that someone's not what they were. Mm-hmm. So I love that people bring that up, and it's sad that they bring it up a little too late sometimes.
Yeah, right. It is this like, let's go in and do some of this work inside of us and then how we can co-create that together. Okay, I'm going to put you in the hot seat. What are some of your biggest patterns that you've had to break as a parent or a partner?
Ooh, I love that. Thank you for putting me on the spot. I love answering real things. So for me, it would be expectations. So I've had to be more realistic with what married life is and what being a parent is. And another thing I would say I really have had to break is, I've never been someone who does well with flexibility. So with ADHD and kind of neurodivergent of this is how we're going to do it. And then plans change. And I go, what? And I kind of like glitch a little bit. So that has been a huge adjuster for me to being more flexible. But I've had to learn that not just because of marriage and parenting. I have a chronic illness. I have Crohn's. So over the years, I've had to learn to cancel plans and be okay with it. Not be able to show up the way I would like to. And kind of lower that standard of expectation that I've had. I've never been someone who's struggled with feeling for other people and caring for other people. But there is a natural thing where your stuff gets messed up and how it deals with, you know, how you deal with it. Whether it's a kid staying home from school that day because they're sick, and you happen to be the one day where you have two clients and you have all the time in the world to go to the gym and to go to shopping and to do this and do that. And then you're like, well, that sucks. Right. And that could be hard. And I will say that something my wife and I work very hard together is learning to express our needs better, because we're not always the best at it. We used to not be the best at it. And we really work very hard to do that, as well as being honest with where our tank is.
Your energy tank? Yeah. Exactly. Like that's like how much I have left to give.
Yeah. So, but like to constantly be in touch with the other person and to not assume they know, just because, you know, I took care of my son for 3 hours. There are some days where that's a pleasure and wonderful and so yummy and so energizing. And there are some days where it's not. I don't know the difference if you don't tell me, right? I don't know the difference between where it's an energy suck or an energy revival or energy, you know, filler. So if I come home and I'm not in a good headspace, How am I supposed to know that if you don't say, hey, I'm at about a 20 right now, or I'm at like a 45?
Yeah.
Just so that we're just aware. And that means how someone represents themselves, behaves. I don't take it personally or get offended. I know where it's coming from, at least. I know where they're at. You know, a lot of the things also is just with family, like how to juggle someone else's family needs and their view of their family, or how that family plays into our life, and just being on the same page. I don't know if I had many bad habits or patterns mm-hmm. that I was really stuck in. I think it's just mm-hmm. the general stuff. I think I've always been kind of a married kind of guy, you know, in my mentality.
What do you mean navigating the family piece? I know a lot of people struggle with that one.
So like in-laws, you know, how involved are we in their life? How involved are they in our life? Mm-hmm. Now we live near them. Do we go to them every day? Do we have to go to them every day? The pressure. Mm-hmm. Going to holidays, weekends. They used to live in the West Coast. You know, when we go, how long are we staying? What boundaries and rules are we continuing in their environment that we want to make sure is consistent with how we raise our kids, and how to be respectful with my partner about their family. If I don't agree with something, getting sassy and angry and disrespectful puts my wife on defense of her family, even if she agrees with me, because it's her family.
I just want to pause there, because I know that that is a big struggle for so many people, is that we feel something about their family, and then we want to vent it out with our partner because they're our trusted other person. But that is like the most common reaction is, of course, I'm going to protect my family. That's my mom. She raised me, or that's my dad, you know? Even if they agree with you, even if they know that experience to be true, they're going to naturally step into that defensive position. Mm-hmm. And that then calls for us to really need to take that step back and do some of that work for ourselves, and then seeing how we approach our partners for it.
Yeah. And I will say, I forgot to add one thing. A big thing that I've had to work on with ADHD is I notice a lot. I pick up on everything. Mm. Facial expressions.
Also, you're a therapist.
Yeah, I know. So I have to.
Like, you really like heighten that.
I'm very heightened in that way. So the thing for me is learning when to not comment or say something. Mm. I don't need to comment and point out things. It is not my responsibility or job to make a comment and point out every little thing that I might see. It can be nagging. It could be hurtful. It could be not that I'm trying to be degrading or putting down, but it could be frustrating or annoying for someone. So a rule that I try to work on myself is I don't need to comment on everything, but if I do, it has to come with love and compassion and for production, not just because. I shouldn't just say something. Well, why'd you say that? I don't know, just because. Like, that shouldn't be a reason to say something. But if it serves a purpose or can help myself, my kids, my wife, then it's just all how I say it. And that's something that I've had to learn for me. It's all how I say something, not what I actually say. And I think a lot of people need to learn that you can have a safe place to say something doesn't mean that you can say it however you want. You have to give the utmost respect to your partner, to give it with love. And I work with a lot of people that just because you have freedom to say something, remind yourself, who am I talking to? Who am I speaking to? Before you say something, because then if I come to you with love and compassion, if I'm emanating that through me to you, because I do love and care about you, the way I speak to you is going to be kinder, softer, and more loving. And the same thing can be said. It's just about the energy that it comes out with versus anger, aggression, malice, frustration. So pause, remember, take that, you know, that moment. What's your thoughts?
We were away on vacation recently, and our cousin shared the Reddit threads, Am I the Asshole? I'd never heard of it before. Mm-hmm. And of course, I'm fascinated with relationships just as you are. And I was like, yes, read the stories. Let me see. And it was so interesting because a lot of the stories of, am I the asshole in this moment? A lot of what it came down to was you're allowed to express yourself. And how you do that is your how, when, in what context, that is your responsibility. And that is that takes a lot of that self-reflective abilities, the slowing down and the pausing. It's just so interesting. We think of a lot of what happens in our dynamics and relationships really is about how are you sharing this? It's not what, it's how. How do you consider the context of what you and the other person are in, or maybe what they're going through, or what's happening for you, or the timing, or what space is that coming from? Is it coming from anger, frustration, and wanting to denigrate another person? Or is it coming from that love, compassion, and kindness?
I know your expertise is relationships and EFT training and all that kind of stuff that I love. And when I actually have to get my CEUs re-upped, I'm going to spend the money to do that more. I just found out I don't need to do it for another couple of years. So I'm like, yes. You know, wasting my money on stupid trainings and actually spend the money on things I actually care about. When you talk about often about like the roots of a lot of issues, what do you feel are some of the common roots that you see? Because it's not, you know, the stupid toilet seat. It's not the simple fights that we get into. What do you feel, maybe from an EFT perspective or an ACT, you know, I would love to hear your expertise of what do you feel a lot of the root causes? And you can say seven, you can say two. I'm excited to hear any and everything that you feel a lot of couples deal with that they're not dealing with or even getting to that root because they're dealing with such surface level.
Yeah, it's to the root. So this is really where I come in with my attachment perspective as well, is that at our core basic needs, we all long to know that we matter to our partners, that we feel seen by them, that we feel important to them, that we feel a sense of enoughness and worthiness within ourselves. And couples will come to my office and tell me that they've argued about how to chop a certain type of vegetable, or the Sunday night dinner with the in-laws, or the kids tantrum, or goodness, how many have we had those fight? How many people have had the fight around what we should have for dinner? And because somebody is hangry, right? That's me. I'm hangry. At our core, we just want to know though, are you paying attention to me? Are you listening to me? You know, can you give me that attention? And do I even matter in all of this? And so that really does come from that EFT framework. And if we even kind of put on our other hats, like the Gottmans oft also talk about bids for connection of turning towards each other. And this all comes to are you going to prioritize me? Am I important? Am I actually good enough in this relationship? And so what tends to happen though is we have these repeating fights over and over again. And when I say repeating, the content might not be the same, but it sounds the same. Mm-hmm. And so one partner brings forward the issue and the other one gets defensive. And because they got defensive, the other person ups the ante. Do you hear me? Like, are you even listening? And then the other person says, oh my God, you're doing this again. And they get more defensive. And so it's not, you know, when we think about relationships, what our egos like to do is we like to find blame and we like to say, you're the problem. And actually, I'm sure you've noticed it with your four-year-old as well, is that kids have an egocentric brain to begin with. And so you might not even be standing beside your daughter. She goes, oh, daddy, you tripped me. I fell. And so it's this projection outwards. It's the blame. And then what our parents and our environment and our brain development then teaches us is self and other. Oh, I tripped and that feels really uncomfortable and I don't feel good inside. What am I going to do with this? And then I'm looking at the other person and seeing what they're doing and what's happening there. And it's so easy in our romantic relationship to want to blame the other person rather than going inside of ourselves and saying, how am I showing up here? How do I express myself? How do I share my feelings and needs? And is there maybe something that I could be doing differently here?
Yeah. And I think that's something that I've been working with a lot of with myself or my therapist or with, you know, the clients that I work with, the idea of a lot of it comes from where I'm coming from within the issue of that argument or that struggle. And it doesn't mean we shouldn't have an opinion. It doesn't mean we shouldn't have hurt feelings. It doesn't mean any of that stuff. But when I'm coming into, and if I know where I'm coming from into this space, the awareness of that could help me deal with it better. If I, you know, and there was a certain, I know, I'm sure you saw it, or if not, I'm sure it's been repeated like 80 billion times. There was a recent research study done, I forgot from where, that the top five needs from a male and female perspective in a relationship, and women need love. Number one is love. And for one, for men, is to be seen and respected. I am enough. But it doesn't mean that the other things are not on the other lists, you know? And you there, Tracy?
Okay, wait, hang on. So you said I am enough, and I can click up right here. So you said I am enough. That's exactly what we see in the emotion-focused couples therapy literature, is that women tend to come to therapy with the core complaints of connection. Do I matter? Am I important to you? And men in heterosexual relationships come to therapy saying, am I good enough for you? And actually, I had this really, I did this working with the military at one point, and we had talked about how when your male partner is deployed and you're on the phone saying the kids are melting down and I'm having such a hard day, and they're over in another country problem solving. And so a lot of the women were saying, oh, what do I do in this moment? Like, I don't want your problem. Like, I don't want your solutions. I know what the solutions are, but I'm trying to connect with you. Like, do you even see how hard this is for me? Like, I'm home with the kids day after day. I'm alone. I can't do this. And you're like, well, maybe you should just call your mother. And so I helped to reframe this. And I said, right, because so many of, particularly our men, go into this, I can't even provide for my family. I'm not adequate, because look, I'm all the way over here and I can't even help you. And I feel so helpless that this is happening. Do you connect to any of that?
You know, it's kind of so much. I mean, when I, something that I have been feeling lately has been that I don't, that my, like, my kids are going towards my wife more than me. Like, what am I needed for in this space? If when I walk into a room, this happened literally yesterday morning, my daughter on Sunday threw a massive tantrum because she didn't get a stuffed animal at the gift shop that my daughter, my wife and my daughter went to something at one of the hotels, didn't get a, and my wife had to carry her through the hotel screaming, and she's been, her tantrums are really intense lately. Just like very, you know, raw, real feelings.
And can I just normalize that? We've been there. We still have them. And we have all have been carrying our kids out of something. I think I carried my daughter out last Christmas because she didn't get the unicorn earmuffs from the store. And, you know, you just see the people checking at the checkout and you're like, I'm just carrying her out. And she's hitting me.
Child. You know, as long as no one calls the cops thinking I'm stealing the child. That's all. That's all my wife thought. And so,
but so there's this feeling though for you, eh? Like, it was like,
no, I felt bad because I wasn't there, but also she woke up the next morning and was still like, mommy, you didn't get me that. And was through a massive 6:45 in the morning, was back on it for about 35 minutes. My wife comes down to her. She goes, I can't deal with her right now. I need you to. Sure. I go upstairs. I walk differently than my wife. I'm a bigger person. The second I got to the top of the stairs and started walking towards my daughter's room, she goes, no, daddy, I don't want you. Don't even come in my room. I want only mommy. Now, I just peek my head in and go, I love you. I'm here if you need. Right? But there have been many times recently
that happens. And you know what that also says, though? I just want to tap into that enoughness that's stirring up for you. Is, you know what that says? It says, daddy, I feel so safe with you that I can tell you no. You are,
and I know that.
I want listeners to hear that.
and I know that, like, inherently, that she feels safe enough to tell me how she feels, and she's very honest with me, and I love it. Mm. I love her to pieces, and we have a great connection. But there are moments where, like, my son will push me away and say, "No, mama," right? Or my daughter will say, "Not you. I want mommy." Yeah. And like, I used to do bedtime for months Bedtime was me and my daughter. It was our quiet time. I looked forward to it. I have not put her to bed consistently for the past year. And it feels like, okay, if my wife's doing this, my wife's doing that, my wife's doing this, my wife's doing that, what am I doing? Like, what am I doing here right now to help? So I've had to work very hard to ask her when she's doing that, what can I do downstairs? What can I do just so I feel like I'm doing something versus just sitting and moping or being upset about it? Because I know there's going to be a day where the tables are turned and my wife's going to be like, what am I doing here? All they want is dada. And we're going to have our place. And I remember as a joking thing, and then of course we're going to get into your, you know, we're going to flip sides. There was a Chris Rock comedy special that I quote often, where he had this whole thing about the band, and sometimes you're just the tambourine player. Sometimes you are the backup singer or the backup dancer. You're not always going to be the all-star player. Sometimes you need to learn to play that tambourine with all your being. And sometimes you're going to be the lead singer. But like, I'm sitting there supporting you do you, and it doesn't, and I'm okay. I got this tambourine. I'm going to take this tambourine and kill it. I got this. And then there's going to be a day where you take the tambourine from me and say, you know what? I think it's time for you to be the lead singer. But I can't get jealous or upset or realize that my role is in this space and her role is in that space. And there are moments where my kids want just me, and there are moments where my kids just want my wife. And there are moments they want both of us and we're not available, you know? Like this morning, my daughter had a really hard morning going to school, and I was in the car with her, and I had a extra, you know, hour and a half to go to the gym before a client. And I was going to go to the gym, and my daughter needed some extra love in the car because she didn't want to go to school because she's having a hard time with a friend of hers. And I spent a half an hour in the car with her, and that was my time to shine, was my softness and my energy that she needed, that my wife might not have been able to do in that moment. Because she was more rushed, because she had a client at 9, because of all these things, but I was able to do that. So later today, if my daughter doesn't want me because she wants my wife and she wants to connect with my wife, that's the key. She's trying to connect with her. I know that I connected with her today. I was able to find that spot. I was a tambourine player for a little bit, but then I became the lead singer. And that's great. And it's been a very hard internal work for me because it gets me down where my daughter rejects me. But it's something that for all parents to listen to is when your kids are crying out in the middle of the night and they want you. Yeah, it's annoying. I get it. It's hard. You're tired. Or they want your mommy versus daddy. They want to connect with that person. They're trying. They want love. Kids just want love. They're not trying to be manipulative. They're not trying to be hurtful. They're not trying to keep you awake. They're not trying to be annoying. It can be annoying. They want your love for some reason. They woke up in the middle of the night and they want you because you're the one who can calm them down. And that's something that I have to remind myself, like they want me. They want that connection. They want the love. Let me step up and show them that love because I do have it for them. And when you can't, that's when you ask for help. You ask to step out for a second. When you can't show them that love, step away because that's not the interaction that they need.
Right. You're removing the self in there, which we are trying to help our children differentiate from us. And if we say things like that hurts daddy's feelings, or you're not thinking about mommy or something like that, right? It puts the I in there. It's us. And that's not what we're doing with our children. We're saying, yeah, that makes sense why you want that person right now. And if they're not available, being able to have that boundary of they're not able to come right now. It's me right now. I know you don't want me. But when we remove our We froze. My internet is just having a hard time today.
It's okay.
Okay. So then I think then the context
when we remove
of
our,
we remove ourselves. We remove the I from this, that it's not about us in the context of parenting. We want our children to differentiate from us. It's not that I'm not enough as a mother. It's not that I'm not important as a mother. This is them. They're growing and they're differentiating in our relationships. Then what we need to do is it's this balance between, am I healing some of my own stuff And also then how do I ask for my needs to be met? Because that's the autonomous and the connection piece. But that autonomy piece is, do I believe that I'm enough? Mm-hmm. Do I go to my partner and say, do you love me? Do you love me? Am I important? Tell me I'm important. Do you need me? And when we constantly seek that reassurance, we've got the hole in our bucket. Mm-hmm. And then our work is to actually repair the hole, because anything others give us, it just goes right through the bucket. Bucket never fills up. And we also, mm-hmm. it's this balance in self and relationship where we have to say, okay, can I turn to my partner and say, gosh, like my bucket's empty and I think we need some time together? Mm-hmm. Or is this I have a hole in my bucket and I need to do some of that work too?
Yeah. I had a client that was begging her partner to like constantly tell her. She would always ask him like, do you love me? And he's like, yeah, I tell you every day I love you. He's like, no, but do you love me? Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah.
I tell you every day.
Why do you keep asking me that?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's tricky, right? We've got to balance that. Like what part of this is mine to do? And mm-hmm. what is this for our relationship in terms of how we are communicating? All right. I have to ask this piece because one of the common questions that show up in my community.
My turn to be the hot seat. Okay. I'm excited.
So this is around the mental load. And so I have partners that will say, I work all day. I'm bringing home the money. So I shouldn't have to be doing all these tasks at home. How do you address this piece around the mental load?
Smack him across the face. That's what I would say. No. The mental load thing is something that's so real. Uh-huh. And I think that what I don't think men realize is what it actually is. I don't think they understand what it's like to be in a woman's head feeling that. Uh-huh. And it's also hard for women to actually convey it because it's so much. It sounds ridiculous that you are taking on and thinking about all that all the time. That it's sometimes not even able to be expressed because it's like, I can't say all this. This sounds insane. Mm-hmm. So the biggest thing is, men, anyone listening, we have to be more cognizant that we do not understand how it feels to deal with all that stuff. That's one. Two, just because you might make money and bring it in, good for you. There is a joint responsibility that is the home. You signed up for that to your book, haha. But you signed up for that responsibility
to
take care of the home together. It is a joint responsibility. It is not one person's responsibility and does not get pawned off just because outside of the home, you might be doing different things. Mm. When you step into that house, when you walk into that space, whether it's for parenting, whether it's for chores, taking care of the house, dinner, your partner, love, any
taking
of those
care of the
things,
the relationship,
right? The love and the relationship, that is a joint responsibility. It falls on both of you 100-100. It is not because I had a hard day, I don't show up. Now, it might mean that you're not able to show up the best way you possibly would hope, mm-hmm. but the mm-hmm. goal is that you hope to show up the best self in those things. So I don't like when men do that, like, well, I work so hard. So does everyone. Everyone works hard in their own way. Whether it's a stay-at-home mom, a part-time mom, a full-time job, I don't care. Everyone's working hard in their own way. It doesn't mean that you're now exempt from taking care of your kids. It doesn't mean you're exempt from doing things around the house. It doesn't mean you're exempt from partaking in your relationship. Can you hear me?
It doesn't mean you're exempt. Go
get it. Taking in the relationship, all it means is that you have to realize maybe it means taking a pause, resetting, and then stepping in. Find a pattern, whether it means you're listening to a certain thing on the way home, or your mindset is that I was at work and now I'm at home. Or ask for 10 minutes before getting back into that space. but you need to show up. The mental load is something that we will never understand. That's okay. We don't need to help. As well as for the partner, the women who are feeling the mental load. What I would say is take a 2-week data point. See what you can actually shave off that you are putting on yourself versus being able to ask someone to help your partner. So this happened in my life recently where my wife and I discussed there were a lot of dishes in the sink. And I said, okay, we're both going to take turns doing dishes on Sunday. I'm taking my daughter to dance. You're home with Max. Do as much as you can, but please let me do dishes. Let me take care of something. Don't do them all. What happened? She did 95% of it and then got overwhelmed by it. So I said afterwards, I'm like, we talked about this. I wanted to help. You took that upon yourself to do more. So I urge women to not take on more than what is expected and let the other person show up. Ask the other person to show up. Give them a space to show up. If you keep doing 95% of things, they won't have the opportunity. And it will put more burden on your shoulders because you're taking on 95% of a responsibility. And you need to discuss with them how much you can do and how much they need to do also. Let them show up. Let them have an opportunity to do something. Because the more you take it away, it creates this space. This happens with parenting too. It creates this natural space where it's like, I call it the push out. Where like, you're doing so much and you want to come in. It's like, no, I got this. And you keep doing this. Like, I got this with your hand. No, I got this. And you keep pushing them farther and farther from being able to help and partake that they can't find their own ability to do it. And then they become like helpless.
Right.
Oh, I don't know how to do the laundry. Why not? Because you keep saying, I got this. Never mind. You go do something else. Yeah. Let them do it. Show them. Give them the opportunity. Don't take it on all yourself. It's unfair to you. And it ends up being unfair to the unit and the family because you're overwhelmed, you're stressed, you're not okay. And you deserve to have freedom and you deserve to have a state of mind that's healthier. So let the other person in. Ask for the things that you think they can do. Ask for the things in their wheelhouse of skills. Ask for help. Don't just assume they can't. Even if they messed up, even if they didn't do it right. You know, my dad told me this joke when I first got married, and I hate it because I hate those kind of jokes, but I'll say it anyways. He's like, you know what you should do the first time you got to do dishes? Break a dish. They'll never ask you again. We don't want to create that mentality. If someone makes a mistake, we don't not ask again. It's okay.
We ask and we ask again when there's a learning for both sides. It's interesting when I think of my postpartum days and kind of going through that drastic shift of no longer being at work full time and then being at home and the amount of pressure I would put on myself. Not in our context, it wasn't necessarily that Greg was coming home and saying, you have to have the kitchen perfectly clean and have all the meals. But it took me time to recognize that I can't do all of this during the day. Heal, feed, nap time, all of those things, and then prepare a dinner at the same time. And so removing that pressure had to be this learning curve that I did for myself and also for our whole family. That doesn't necessarily change the mental load, but you'll have a chuckle at this. I was solo parenting the other night and I didn't do the dishes. I like to pile them nicely in the sink. And now I know if I do the dishes and I'm also solo parenting, I exhaust myself. I kind of get into that like mode and just doesn't feel good. So I decided not to do the dishes. So then the kids and I are outside. They start to play at the sprinkler. I'm looking around. I'm thinking it'd be really nice to mow the lawn. I do enjoy mowing the lawn. It's something that I only learned before I turned 30. I asked my husband to teach me then. So I was like, I want to mow the lawn and push the thing back and forth and be outside. Not on a solo parenting night. But what did I do? I mowed the lawn. And guess what? I was short fused when the kids were having such a hard time at solo bedtime that night. And then I was exhausted. And then when Greg got home, I was like, I'm too tired. Don't talk to me. But that was me. I put that on me. Yeah. And there's no really good reason for that, except, you know, sometimes we make choices that aren't really aligned with what's going to feel good in the long run.
And no, I also would just add, first of all, I love that story. And I do that myself, but I also would add, you also have to take into account like what culture was created around relationships. I used to work with someone where like every time they pushed back on doing things around the house to like have their husband partake and be involved in joint responsibility. The mom would be like, he's going to leave you. What kind of wife are you? You know, like that's not how we do things. That's not how wives, you should cook the dinner and get everything. Like, and that was like a thing that was in the back of her head. So then when she didn't do that, she felt extremely guilty that she's not being a good wife. The only people who get to decide what that looks like is the two of you. What is the expectation of a wife? What is the expectation of a husband? What is the expectation of a partner? What is the expectation of teamwork? How does it work when, you know, this happens and that happens? But if you don't talk about it, and it could be a constant conversation when something new comes in, how do we want to deal with this? Whether it's drop off and pick up, you know, for years, I did drop off and pick up for my daughter all her life until recently because my wife didn't have as much of a flexible job. That's fine. Was it frustrating at times? Yeah, it was a lot sometimes. It was stressful. But it doesn't mean that my wife did nothing. And then she felt bad that she wasn't doing that, that she felt all this internal guilt that I must be resentful to her. When I wasn't. It was just part of the schedule. And I said to her, I know that if you could, you would. But you can't.
Right.
You can't.
There's like this testing of assumptions in a way, isn't there? Of like, you know, if we have all of this messaging inside of us. And I know I've done this as well. In the sense of, you know, are you upset with me that you have to do these things because Greg steps into perhaps the traditional, non-traditional roles that we might see, right? So are you frozen again?
Nope.
No. Okay.
I'm just listening.
So Greg will then do pickups and drop-offs, and he is making more meals. He makes the dinner and does the kids' lunches. And there are times where I step into that space of, are you frustrated with me that you have to do these things? And it is breaking out of some of these old narratives and scripts that we've been taught. And that can be really hard. And so it's that point that I was trying to make there is like, if we act based on our assumption, the assumption is, oh, they're mad at me for having to do something, instead of actually testing it out with them and talking to them.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with that 100%.
I'm having so much fun talking with you.
Yeah, it's great. Having a party.
We are. I hate to wrap things up, but I also know that you and I have other things that we have to get to. Where can listeners find you, and what do you have going on? Because you've been doing some great things.
Yeah, so listeners can find me, the Dude Therapist podcast, of course. My Instagram is LEWeinstein_LCSW. My website's LEWeinsteinLCSW.com. What I got going on, I'm just being a therapist. You know, I do coaching. I speak if people would like me to come out to their organization, neighborhood, what have you. And just trying to do the best thing I can every day. And, you know, some days feel better than others, but please reach out. And where can people find all your stuff? Because you've got a book coming out.
I do. I have a book for you. I'm an author. I am at drtracyd.com and also this my own podcast, I'm Not Your Shrink. The book is called I Didn't Sign Up for This. If you are looking to grab that, head over to my website, drtracyd.com/book, or head to Amazon or any other place where you buy your books. They'll be there available for pre-order right now. And then it comes out September 12th. And the book really, I think, connects to what you and I have talked about today, which is showing up human in our relationships, how we struggle, and how we can really build that interdependence. And I do that through telling stories of four couples, as well as the story of how I found myself saying the same thing about my husband of, I didn't sign up for this after having kids.
Well, I love it. I can't wait to read it.
Thank you. I'm going to send it to you. All right. Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for tuning into this week's episode of The Dude Therapist. It means a lot to me because without you, the listeners, this podcast can't happen. So every listen, every download, every rate, review, and share means so much to me. And I hope you enjoyed these conversations as much as I did. Talking about wellness, mental health, and relationships is one of my passions, and that's what this podcast is all about. So thanks so much for tuning in. As always, if you have any questions, concerns, ideas, thoughts, collaborations, email me at thedudetherapist@gmail.com. Always feel free to DM me on Instagram at @thedudetherapist. Don't forget to be kind to yourself and to others. And as always, see you next time on the Dude Therapist podcast.